There are a couple stories in this last week that I came across that I thought I'd share with you this morning. The first one is out of Perkins, Oklahoma. How many of you from Perkins, Oklahoma? Nobody. Population 2,500 people. How many from Oklahoma? Just one. Okay, two. All right. My mother is an Okie. So I have a little bit of that Okie blood in me somewhere. Well, this is out of Perkins, Oklahoma. A small town bank in Oklahoma said the Federal Reserve won't let it keep religious signs and symbols on display. Did you read about this? The Federal Reserve examiners come every 4 years to make sure banks are complying with a long list of regulations. Now, the examiners came last week to Perkins, and the team from Kansas City deemed that the Bible verse of the day, crosses on the teller's counter, and buttons that say, Merry Christmas, God is with us, were inappropriate. The Bible verse of the day on the bank's internet site also had to be taken down. Now, here's a quote from Amy Weirman, who's a Perkins resident. I don't think there should be a problem with them displaying whatever religious symbols they want to display. Now, specifically, the feds believed that the symbols violated the discouragement clause of Regulation B of the bank regulations. Now, according to the clause, the use of words, symbols, models, and other forms of communication that express, imply, or suggest a discriminatory preference or policy of exclusion is prohibited. So the guy came in from Kansas City and he said, listen, you guys are violating the clause B, and so you have to take all this stuff down. Now, I know that we live in a society that is very plural, that we coexist with people who are not Christian. But come on, this is a small community in the middle of Oklahoma. They're about a tenth the size of Del Lago. And, well, first of all, they've got their own bank. Now, how unfair is that, right? Because we don't have our own bank yet, but they've got their own bank. And these people have been banking at this bank. They've been displaying Christmas stuff all this time for years and years and years. And then some federal guy comes in and says, you can't display this anymore. It's against the federal banking regulations. You might be discriminating people. So you got to pull all that stuff out. I think, for some reason, I mean, I know we live in a pluralist society. I know we've got to coexist with other people. But for some reason, this story really made me angry. The bank is quietly fighting for a clear interpretation of the clause. And the officials had contacted their U.S. legislatures. Now, the other story is across the pond at the British, and it's in a place called Glastonbury. Now, Glastonbury is home to a tree. It's called the Glastonbury tree. Now, according to legend, Joseph of Arimathea. Now, you remember who Joseph of Arimathea is? He's the guy that buried Jesus' body. And the legend has it, according to the people of Glastonbury, that Joseph of Arimathea traveled all the way over to Great Britain, and he was resting one day, and he stuck his wooden staff in the ground. And apparently the wooden staff belonged to Jesus. And into the ground on Weary Hill before he went to sleep. When he woke the next morning, where he had put the staff in the ground had sprouted into a tree, which became a shrine for Christians across Europe. But this last week, apparently, vandals came in and cut down the tree. Been around for 2,000 years, they came in and cut down the tree. And it's made the people of Glastonbury very, 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 very upset. Now, apparently, it's not the first time that this tree has been cut down. It's happened before, but they've been able to save prunings and saplings from the tree and regrow it and replant it in the same spot. So apparently, this whole idea of the world being against God's people is not a new idea. Apparently, it's happened for years and years and years. It's part of the history of God's people. And even though it makes us upset and furious, the fact is it's nothing new. And the fact that I may get furious and upset when I read this story is the fact is it's nothing new. It's existed for a long time. It existed in the time of Isaiah. Now, in our Old Testament reading from Isaiah today, we have to understand a little bit about the structure of Isaiah. In the prophet Isaiah's writing, what you find out is that Isaiah's going to tell of a time when God's people aren't necessarily going to be protected. They're going to be persecuted, and things are going to get really, really bad. And so he talks about how bad the things are going to get, and then he gives good news. And then he talks about how bad things are going to get and good news. Now, right before chapter 11, the prophet Isaiah says that the whole entire kingdom of Israel is going to be torn apart. They're going to be conquered by the enemies. The northern kingdom is going to be conquered by the Assyrians. The southern kingdom is going to be conquered by the Babylonians. And what you know of your nation, the prophet Isaiah is telling the people, what you know of this nation is going to be completely obliterated. What's going to happen is we're going to come in, or the powers are going to come in, the Assyrians and the Babylonians, they are going to conquer this nation. They're going to take the people away in captivity. They're going to destroy the temple. And what you now know as the people of Israel are going to be gone. This battle between good and evil, between God's people and not God's people, is a long battle. But the prophet Isaiah has hope. And the hope comes, the first hope comes in chapter 11, which is our text, our Old Testament text this morning. And so we're just going to briefly go through Isaiah chapter 11, verses 1 through 10, and we're going to talk about the hope that Isaiah was talking about. And right off the bat, Isaiah says, "A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse, from his roots a branch will bear fruit." Now, the Hebrew here is very, very, very specific about where this shoot is going to come up from the stump of Jesse. Now, this last year, I have a tree in my front yard, and I cut the tree off. I cut a bunch of branches off of the tree, and now I look, and there's these sprouts coming out from the branch that I cut off. But that's not what Isaiah is saying. He's very specific. He's saying it's going to be from the stump of Jesse, which is an allusion to the fact that God's kingdom is coming from the Jesse, which is King David. But it doesn't come from the top. It comes from the roots. This branch, this root that comes out of the stump of Jesse, doesn't come from the top. It comes out of the roots of Jesse. You see, the promise that God gave to us, the promise of Jesus, isn't a superficial promise. It comes from the very heart of the nation of Israel. If you look at Jesus Christ and look at the prophecies about him and look about the New Testament writings about him, we find out that Jesus was eternal with the Father from beginning of time. Remember John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. The Word was God, and all things were created by him. And we also hear this from John the Baptist when he came in. Remember, he had that cryptic saying that said, John testified concerning him. He cries saying, "This is he of whom I said, he who comes after me has surpassed me because he was before me." What does that all mean? It means that Jesus was before John the Baptist. Now, you remember John the Baptist was actually older than Jesus, but Jesus existed long before John the Baptist. He was from eternity. It's something that you need to remember when we fight this cosmic battle against evil, is that God is from eternity. And he has always existed, and he always will exist. And you talk about all these other religions that pop up, and they never give an answer for what is God and how long has he existed. And even in our Christian faith, we have people that talk about different ways that God judges people. Folks, the birth and the coming of Jesus is the central point of all history. Everything that happened before the birth of Jesus was leading up to his life, death, crucifixion, and resurrection. And everything after that is contingent upon that. There's not all these different ways and everything like that. Everything in this world, including all the Old Testament prophet stuff from Isaiah, it all centers around the life and death of Jesus Christ. And he's existed from eternity and he will exist from eternity. That's an important point that we need to remember in this cosmic battle. The second thing about this cosmic battle comes from chapter 11, verses 2 and 3. "The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. The spirit of wisdom and understanding, of counsel and power, the spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord." These are the sevenfold attributes of Jesus. But look at these attributes. Is it wealth? Is it might? Is it strength? Or is it something else? Is it a spirit of wisdom, of understanding, of counsel, delight in the fear of the Lord? If you're going to fight the cosmic battle, you need cosmic tools. And the cosmic tools are not might and strength and power. The cosmic tools are wisdom and understanding and counsel and knowledge of the fear of the Lord. If that doesn't describe Jesus, I don't know what does. But the fact is, it is the tools, the only tools that the church has against the powers of evil in this world are these sevenfold powers, the powers of wisdom and understanding and might. I remember this movie that we saw recently. It was called Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Have you seen this? It's with Shia LaBeouf, and he becomes the new Indiana Jones. Turns out that he's going to be the new Indiana Jones. And there's this one scene. If you've seen any of the Indiana Jones movies, they come and all of a sudden these people are going to attack him. And so Shia LaBeouf pulls out a knife, and then all of a sudden all these people show up with guns. And Indiana Jones says, "Looks like you brought a knife to a gunfight." I'm sure you've heard that term before. Well, if you're going to fight the cosmic battle, don't bring a knife to the gunfight. The gunfight is the cosmic battle between good and evil. And the only thing that works in this battle are these wisdom, are these sevenfold attributes. All right, so we're going to go on. Continuing on, he will not judge by what he sees with his eyes or decide by what he hears with his ears, but with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions of the poor. Righteousness will be his belt and faithfulness a sash around his waist. You see, if you're going to be fighting in this battle, you need to have righteousness. Righteousness is an important characteristic to have in this battle. But the fact is, you and I don't have righteousness. Because why? It's because he will not judge by what he sees with his eyes or decide by what he hears with his ears. God doesn't look at the outward stuff to determine our righteousness. And if you're relying on the outward stuff for God to determine your righteousness, you are fighting the wrong battle because God sees into the heart. And when God looks into your heart, what does he see? Does he see righteousness? Or does he see an evil heart in every single one of us, a heart that has the potential for doing evil to other people? When he looks at this church, what does he see? Does he see all the outward appearances, or does he look inside the heart? See, God doesn't necessarily look on the outward appearance. He looks in the heart, and when he looks in the heart, what does he find? The only way that God will find righteousness in our heart is if he himself came down to this earth, was born in a stable, and died so that he could give to us righteousness. And God has imputed into us, he's given to us righteousness so that we are fit for the battle. And it's only through the power of Jesus that we are righteous to fight this battle. And if you think you're doing it on your own, you're going with a knife in a gunfight. God gives the righteousness. Luther once said that all of our righteousness is like filthy rags in God's sight. Jesus is our only righteousness. And then towards the end of this chapter, we get this beautiful picture of the peace that will happen at the end of time. The wolf will live with the lamb. The leopard will die down with the goat. The calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear, and the young will lie down together. The lion will eat straw like an ox, or with the ox. It's a picture of heaven. It's a picture of what it must have been like in the Garden of Eden before sin. This time of incredible peace. This time where peace, where people could live freely with animals and not worry about getting destroyed by animals. Where the prey and the predator could live together in complete harmony. And it's only because of the sin of this world that came at the fall of man that this cosmic battle has been playing out. And you and I are players in this cosmic battle. And God gives us the righteousness to be players in this battle. But we know that the end game is that someday there will be peace again. That all the struggles that we fight in this world, and my goodness, are we fighting struggles. We're fighting them here in the United States. We're fighting them over in the pond where the good and evil are fighting each other. I mean, we've got fighting in the state legislature. We've got fighting in the Senate. We've got fighting in the Congress. We've got fighting overseas. Everywhere is fighting, fighting, fighting. It's like, when will it stop? Well, it won't stop, friends. As long as sinful human beings live on this earth, it won't stop. But God has endowed each and every one with you with his righteousness to fight the battle. And we know that the victory is God's. And that he has already won the battle. He's already won the war. We may fight these little battles. We may go into a little town and tell them, okay, you can't put up your Christmas decorations. Or you can chop down the Glastonbury tree or whatever you want to do to us. It doesn't matter. Those are just skirmishes. The fact is, the battle has been won. and peace will reign eternal. Because the central point of history, of all the Old Testament, of all the New Testament, everything came and lived among us and died on a cross for our sins and won peace for all of us of all time. That is the greatest thing that we celebrate in this Christmas season, this Advent season, that great joy that we have. The predator and the prey will lie down together in perfect peace because the Prince of Peace came to you and me. And that's what we celebrate. In Jesus' name.